Good evening. My name is Scott Lee, and I am an alcoholic. Overwhelmed alcoholic, and honored to be in the presence of 61 years of sobriety. That's, wow. Thanks, Steve, for inviting me, for the committee, for everyone who made it possible for me and Miss Linda to attend Founders Day. We are honored to be here, and it's just a little bit overwhelming, I mean, try to imagine. And I'm just a puking drunk from down south, and I will get to that in a couple of minutes. I'd like to ask, by the way, if I could, would the Al-Anons please stand, and other members of Al-Anon come to support us. Would y'all please stand? Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to honor your fellowship. I couldn't have the spectacular life that I have if Miss Linda didn't have a fabulous Al-Anon program. I salute you, and I'm honored by your presence. Thank you. And I'd like to open my talks with a quotation from Lois Wilson, co-founder of your fellowship, who was asked one time what she did in the moment of silence before the Serenity Prayer. And she said, "I invite God to the meeting." And it's not that I don't believe God's here. I believe He's here. But I get a special gift when I stop and honor that presence. There was a beautiful AA member named Don from Denver who was my great teacher. And he said he learned to treat God like a gentleman. It was his experience that gentlemen don't go where they're not invited, and they don't stay where they're not made welcome. So my morning when I wake up, one of the first things I do is I invite God in to run my life. Not give me some help, but take it. And then I try to conduct myself during the day in a manner that I think will make Him welcome. A lot of new people here. Congratulations, those of you under a year who got to Founders Day. Wow, fantastic. We're thrilled to have you. Congratulations also to the old timers that made you come. I, too, have been the victim of strong sponsorship. And so there, with this many new people, there are probably people here who don't have a God, or you got one you're afraid of, or something's not working for you. If that's your case, I'd like you to borrow my God for this time we're here tonight. You can address Him as the God of Scott's limited understanding. Get you off on the right foot. And I recommend it very highly. He's been keeping me sober since 28th of June of 1984. And yeah, and that's for you. Thank you. Thank you for your help on that. And he also has a great sense of humor. If you don't think so, look around the room. I think we're pretty funny, don't you? And the other thing I do in the moment of silence is I ask God to help me not judge the speaker. Now, you don't have to do that. But meetings have gotten better everywhere since I've started doing that. So you might want to try it. So if you would, humor me. And let's have a couple of moments of silence and literally invite God to join us and bless us with open hearts, and I'll meet you back here. Amen. Thank you. Thanks very much. I was asked to tell my story, and I found the direction, strangely enough, in this blue book that I know some of you are familiar with. I'm carrying a fourth edition. I got sober on the third, but I carry a fourth, and I've asked the men I sponsor to carry a fourth because the Roman numerals don't match, and our newcomers are confused enough. So I'm carrying the fourth. But here on page 29, it says, "Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God." So that must be my topic. I didn't begin my life on a mission to have a relationship with God. I began my life a victim of the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I managed well. Recognize that? Page 61. What it says is that I'm so nuts that I actually think at times if I can get what I want, it'll make me happy. Isn't that insane? When you look at the history, I am, by the way, a member of the Backroom Group in Nashville, Tennessee. And And I didn't come this way to talk to you. I came to talk with you. Play with me. All right, so we're going to try an example on that one. Who, when you were a child, wanted a bicycle? You were certain if you could get a bike, you'd be happy, and you got a bike. Anybody? Okay, thanks. Are you happy? Now, let's try another one. Who wanted him or her? Sure, if you could get him, be happy, and you got him. Come on. Okay, now you could be sitting next to him, so I won't ask that other question. Not trying to get you in any trouble trying to make a point. Who was sure if you could get rid of him or her that you'd be happy? Come on. I got to look at the truth. And the truth is, getting what I want won't make me happy. It never did. I like to quote the noted American philosopher Alfred E. Newman, who once said, most people don't know what they want, but they're pretty sure they haven't got it. And that's my story. And I didn't start drinking until I was 18. I went away to college. I was in Fraternity Rush. Fraternity boys start drinking beer. I start drinking beer. If they'd been going down to burn down the police station, I would have gone with them to... I wanted to be one of the guys. Something terrible. And so I start drinking beer. I don't like the taste. I don't like the way the bubbles feel going down. But they're drinking beer. I'm drinking beer. And by the time the second beer hit bottom, I got magic. And all the alcoholics in the room understand that. And I don't think anyone else ever really does. And I was just suddenly taller. Who got taller? Come on, taller. Taller, thank you. Better looking, leave them up. Better looking, right? Pimples fell right off. Right? How about lubricated lips, guys? You can talk to the girls, right? And girls, you can stand to listen to it. Yeah. That helped everybody. And fantastic dancer. That's some dancers. Ah, some dancers right down front here. Yeah, some dancing. Woo! Yeah. How about this one? Expert on many subjects. Just all of a sudden made sense, right? Just now we got it, right? Yeah. And any one of those would have been enough. And I'm not even to the big one yet. Because the big one was, for the first time in my life, something inside me went, and it was just okay. And it had never been just okay to be me up until that moment. Up until that moment, I think I would have traded lives with anybody because mine wasn't working. And in two beers, I transitioned from the fear that these fraternity guys would see through this mask I'm holding up, right? Because I'm an actor all the time. So somehow, as a very small boy, I became convinced that I'm not good enough. I'm one of the defective ones. And there are things wrong with me that can't be fixed. And I became an actor as a very small boy, pretending to be the guy that I think you want me to be. And use whoever's in front of me right this second. At the end of my drinking, I got a customer at one end of my territory that's a very religious guy. He knows a very religious guy. Got a customer 40 miles away that's a party on Friday night guy. He knows a party on Friday night guy. I got the boys on the pool room where I drink my beer and I buy my alcohol substitutes. And I get family members, neighbors, business partners. Everybody knows a different Scott. And the greatest fear in my life is that people from different segments of my life be at the same place, same time. How am I going to act? Because I'm acting all the time. By the time I get to you, I've been acting so long, I have no idea who I really am. All I know for sure is that if you can see through this act I'm doing, you won't want me around. Because if you can see me like I see me, you'll think about me like I think about me, and I think I'm garbage. And two beers later, at 18 years old, I'm tall enough, smart enough, good looking enough, I can talk to the girls, I'm a fantastic dancer, expert on many subjects, and I transition from the fear that these guys will see through my act and not me with them. They won't want me. I transition from that to, these turkeys are right lucky I'm here. For those who did not recognize that, that's an entire psychic change. That's what that is. And I think that's why Dr. Silkworth in the text tells me that's what I have to get over alcoholism, because that's what it gave me. A badly needed entire psychic change. And sort of fast forward, I zipped through a 4-year college and 5 years and 2 summer schools. Come on, where are you? Ah, these are my people. Thank you. Yes, yeah. 5 or 5.5 or more, okay? I don't want to, yes, ma'am. And the United States Air Force was taking most everybody in the mid-1960s, and they took me. And they sent me to Valdosta, Georgia, where I speak the language, to Air Force pilot training. And the last 6 months of that training, we flew the T-38, which you're all familiar with. You may not know it, but you are. Everybody see Top Gun? Saw the movie? We got the dogfight with the MiGs. Newsflash. The Russian government did not loan Hollywood any MiGs to make a movie. That black airplane is the Air Force's advanced jet trainer. The single-seat version is the F-5. And I had the privilege of flying this plane for about 6 months. It is a high-performance airplane. High-performance, by definition, means it has afterburners. It will fly faster than the speed of sound. We go from brake release to 40,000 feet in 3.5 minutes. Yeah, they don't have that right at the fair. This thing has a roll rate of 720 degrees a second, twice around every second. Your eyeballs won't track that if you're sober. It's a blur. It's a beautiful blur, but it's a blur. A loop in this plane, a loop is defined as a 360-degree turn to the vertical plane, pulling positive Gs. In this plane, you enter a loop at 10,000 feet at 500 knots, and you pull up at 5 Gs. Let me tell you what 5 Gs means. You're pulling 1 G right now. It's force of gravity. At 1 G, a 200-pound man weighs 200 pounds. At 5 Gs, a 200-pound man weighs 1,000 pounds. That's what that means. It means everything on you now weighs times 5. That includes your upper eyelids. You'll be aware of that at 5 Gs and above. All right, here we are, 10,000 feet, 500 knots, 5 Gs. We're wings level inverted at 20. Takes 10,000 feet to pull her over on her back. We lose 8 or 10,000 feet coming down the backside. Total elapsed time under 25 seconds. The Thunderbirds flew this plane for 7 years, and we did most of what they did. Okay, I tell you all that about the airplane for two reasons. The first one, of course, is to impress you. Anybody? Yeah, I'm up on that. We got to get one of those. And the second one is because I think it'll help you see my alcoholism very clearly. As a matter of fact, I hope it'll help you see yours, because we all got the same story. So we're finished flying at about 5 or 5:30 in the afternoon. I used to get drunk on purpose a lot. That's the mission. I'm going out tonight to get drunk. And if that's not why you're going out, I'd rather not have you along. You're going to be a problem later. I will make an exception if you're driving and buying. Right. You bet. Absolutely. But I used to get drunk by accident. Were you ever unintentionally drunk? Anybody ever accidentally drunk? You know what I mean? On a night you were sure when you weren't gonna? Okay. Now let me set the scene for you. I have a flight tomorrow morning in this airplane in what we call the two-ship formation. Just after liftoff, as the wheels are coming up, I'm going to slide under the leader's tail at about 4 feet away. And we're going to be pulling 5 to 7.5 Gs, doing what we call go over the top. Let me say it this way. Guys like me go to sleep on roller coasters. They're dull. I'm going to be doing that at 7:30 tomorrow morning. Clearly not going to get drunk tonight. Nobody with a brain would get drunk the night before going to fly closed formation, high-performance acrobatics. Can you see that? But I do want to stop by the club and socialize with the other pilots of my squadron. See if you can fill in the mind. I'm going to have one beer, no more than two. Yeah, right. Okay, you got to remember, I got that flight in mind. Now, I noticed some of the Al-Anons didn't play. I want to encourage you. This is what you heard on the phone. And you believed it again. That's why you must come to Al-Anon. Because the ones that ran screaming away from guys like me don't have to come to your thing, do they? No, they don't. Okay. So all together, I'm going to have one beer, no more than... I should be on by 6:30, no later than... It's good to have a plan. But by the time the second drink hits bottom, I get this phenomenon of craving Dr. Silkworth talks about. I don't get home at 7. I leave the officers' club at exactly 1 o'clock in the morning because they... Quite a few pilots here tonight, Steve. We'll talk flying later. Drive home drunk with a hand over one eye. Come on, where are you? Yeah. Hey, within the last year, I had two guys. One guy come up to me. He says he carried a pair of drunk driving glasses in his glove compartment. And when he was driving drunk, he would put them on. he had spray painted one lens black. The other guy said he carried a roll of duct tape under his front seat, and he would tear off a piece because he didn't want the cop to see him with his hand up. Like, wonder what the cop would have thought about the duct tape. I sponsor some cops. I need to ask them that. Okay, so I drive home drunk. I walk in. My first wife tears into me. There's a lot of information in that sentence. And head into the bathroom for my after-drinking chores. All right, pukers. Come on. Who puked? Come on, put them up. All right, how about out your nose? Nose pukers. Oh, not you, darling. Oh, these are my people. These are my people. One of the things you'll notice if you look closely about your nose pukers tend to quit forever when they're puking out their nose. Is that right? That's right. You bet. Absolutely. And I thought the two most important inventions of the 20th century, one was that little half moon of carpet they put around the commode for you to kneel on. That was invented by one of our guys. You know, his knees were all thrown up on that hard bathroom floor. He said, we ought to put... And that soft commode seat you could rest your head on, kind of in between heaves there. It's not as cold as the porcelain, but it is soft. Who quit solemn oath on the Bible in front of witnesses at least once? Come on. All right, that's pretty good. Who peed in the closet? Did you really? I never did that. I'm so embarrassed for you. God, that's awful, Steve. Oh, no, not you. Your intergroup chairman peed in the closet. I never did that. Big difference between sharing in a meeting of the fifth step. You might want to talk to your sponsor about what you shared. Just a suggestion. Wow. I will admit that my first wife is still angry about that antique coffee table that used to be in the living room. I'll admit that. On a serious note, who carries meetings into correctional facilities on a regular basis? Jails and prisons. Get them up and keep them up for a second. Okay? Everybody else, if you're suffering from depression, get with one of these people and take one meeting into one correctional facility one time, and I guarantee it will break your depression. It will break your depression. I'll tell you right now, don't try somebody else's prescription before you try ours. Thank you. And I got to tell you, that's been one of the great joys of my life. And someone asked Miss Linda one time what she thought about all the time I spend in the jails. And she said, I love it because I love who he is when he came out. You know, I told my sponsor at a year, he said, you're finished in public information forever. That's promotion, what you're doing, son. He said, go to prisons. And I said, I've never been arrested. He said, newsflash, Sparky, the guys in jail already know how to get arrested. They're not going to need your help with that. Rarely have we seen a person in jail who has thoroughly followed our path. That's your mission. Anyway, I was in the county lockup. Wayne's been in that jail. And I was in the county lockup, D-Pod, one night. And I ad-libbed that little thing about who peed in the closet. And they don't laugh much in the jail, but one guy put his hand up and I worked him over, and they laughed pretty good that night. And when the laughter died down, he said, hey, man, no big deal. It wasn't my closet. It's a perspective thing. So anyway, I'm in there puking my guts out, quitting forever. And then I would pray the pre-AA prayer. Now, it's not in the literature, okay? Maybe this is just me playing, but we're going to do it together, all right? I'm going to do the first line, you're going to do the second. All right, here we go. God, get me out of this. Which is alcoholic for amen. Right? I know, that's right. And I brush my teeth and go to bed. It's now 2:30 in the morning, maybe 3 o'clock. I get up at 6. Yeah, I'm not even hungover yet. You remember that wonderland between drunk and hungover? Oh, I miss that so much. And there I am at 7:30 in the morning. I'm wearing jump boots, a flight suit, a G-suit, a parachute, helmet, visor, oxygen mask. I'm sitting on a 20-millimeter cannon shell. There's an ejection seat in this thing. And we light afterburners, and at about 165 miles an hour, as we're coming off the ground and the wheels are coming up, I come up under the leader's tail at about 4 feet. I'm going to be there for the next hour and a half, pulling 5 to 7.5 G's. And I'm dying. Oh, you remember the hangover? You remember the one where the butcher knife went in just above your right eye and came out the back? You remember that one? And the eyelids are made out of sandpaper. My throat and nasal passages are raw. I got a tremor in my hands. I'm sweating booze out of every pore. I've selected 100% on the oxygen lever, and it will not cure a hangover. I tried it hundreds of times, and I talked to Sandy and Lyle and a bunch of our other pods, and they'll tell you the same thing. It won't cure a hangover. And I am also, by the way, tight on the leader flying the mission. And what I just described, in case you missed it, was willpower. Alcoholics, I think, have tremendous willpower, but it's not a defense against this disease. It's really not. The only thing that keeps me going is the sure and certain knowledge that I'll never feel this way in a plane again, because you see, last night, I quit forever, and I meant it with all my heart. Didn't you? Yeah, meant it with all my heart. Over and over again, meant it with all my heart. By 5:30 that afternoon, I'm out well, but I'm only 22 years old. My body's resilient. I've been eating saltines and drinking milk. I'll tell you one thing I know for sure. I ain't getting drunk tonight. I'm going to be in the slot in the diamond tomorrow in a four-ship formation. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm going to be here doing that. Nobody with the brain would get drunk tonight if we're going to do something like that. But I do want to socialize with other pods in my squadron. I think I'll drop by the club and have one beer, no more than... I should be home by 6:30, no later than... But I leave the club at 1 because they... I drive home drunk and I listen to her and I puke my guts out and God get me out of this. Ah, nice amen over there. Yeah, bleh, over and over again. And I can't look into the past all the way to yesterday and say, weren't you dying of a hangover yesterday when we lit afterburners? And every day last week and every day last month. And I was powerless over alcohol, and I was ignorant of the fact that I was powerless over alcohol. And that's a rough combination. I had a gift. There's some guys can hit a golf ball 300 yards. I can drive an airplane. I just become part of it. And I'm proud that I can tell you that they gave 4 distinguished graduate certificates to my pilot training class, and I've got one of them. I just had the gift. I didn't really earn it. I just could do it. And yeah, thank you. I'm very proud of that. I was to fly for 5 years. My earliest memories as a child are sitting in a cherry tree flying it. I always wanted to fly. I just, not too long ago, stumbled across some of my old Air Force records, and I had the highest ratings. They had me marked for high rank. And I resigned my commission and walked away after 5 years. I just walked away from my dream, that's all. Just walked away from my dream. That's what happens to us. I had flown drunk. I had flown a mission classified above top secret, drunk. Now, I'm not this .10 social drinker DUI drunk. Drunk. One of those. And I was so drunk, I taxied it off in the weeds. And if it had been daylight instead of dark, or a plane taxiing behind mine, or if I'd been near the tower instead of at the far end, somebody else would be talking to y'all tonight, and I'd still be in a military prison. I'm not proud of that. But what alcoholism does to guys like me is it leads us to disrespect the things that we love the most. And I resigned my commission after 5 years and just walked away. I got a job as a sales rep. In the summer of 1984, our senior partner came to me one day and he said, "You're going to treatment right now or you're fired." He was a great communicator. This was a guy that could, like, explain things so that you would understand. And June 28, 1984, my sobriety date, was also my 41st birthday. A happy birthday to you. Signed into a little charm school outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And I thought the party was over. I was absolutely certain I would never laugh out loud again. I was pretty sure I wasn't going to smile. And I was wrong about so many things. And I didn't sleep the first 3 nights I was there, and that's not uncommon. And I'm laying there the 4th night knowing I'm not going to sleep again. And what I'm about to describe happened to me. I didn't do it. Some of you may recall, if you're not sleeping, you're not drinking, it stays dark a long time at night. It just kind of goes on and on. And I'm laying there, and I saw my life like you might see a series of short movies, the significant events. And I've always given myself credit for my intentions. I'm probably the best intended person you're ever going to meet. My favorite one, I used to do close-up magic. And my favorite one was I was going to get a clown suit. And when I was on the road, instead of running the bars and chasing the dollies, I was going to put on the clown suit and take my magic kit into a children's hospital and do a show for the kids. Like everybody here today, take a pretty fabulous guy. I haven't done it yet, by the way. Take a pretty fabulous guy. But I'm taking full credit because, you know, one of these days. Our third step talks about a decision. It's my experience that the difference between an intention and a decision, an intention is followed by more intentions. A decision is followed by action. And that's the difference. And this night as I lay there in that hospital bed, I can't see the intentions. And it's not a pretty story. I got to the place where I began to think about the worst thing I've ever done. I got one. And I'd always been able to stop it. Three double jacks to take that out. Six pack. I know how to kill that. Not laying in a bunk in a treatment center. I don't. I can't get it stopped. And I got me all over me. And I can't get anything on. I can't get it to stop. And I hear us using the term bottom. And I think it's a great term. This is my experience. I know men serving long prison sentences as a direct result of drinking who are not at bottom. I have puked blood on several occasions. Wasn't bottom. I've been in plenty of kinds of trouble. Not bottom. For me, bottom was in here. Bottom was of the spirit. When I hated my guts, I was so repulsed by me and what I'd done. And the weight of the shame and the guilt was so heavy that I would have paid any price for relief from that. That's just close as I can come to describing it right now. And at that point, this part of me, what I'm about to tell you, did not happen in my head, did not come out of my mouth, my throat did not move. This part of me screamed to a God that I don't think I believed in, "God, forgive me," like that, with a lot of passion, a lot of power. And what I'm about to tell you, everything else I'm going to tell you happened in the next second. Suddenly there was this magnificent light shining just on me and on my bed. And the light had a texture and a warmth, and there was a weight to it. And there was a physical sensation similar to the one when the dentist finishes taking your x-rays and they pick that lead apron up off of you. Something heavy was laying all over me that I was unaware of until that moment when it flew off of me. And I felt so light, it felt like I was going to float off the bed. Literally felt that way. And I had this tremendous sense of peace and love. With my eyes closed, I could see that room in considerably better detail than I can see this one now. And I lay in the presence of infinite love. And I used to say that God forgave me then, and I want to tell you, I don't speak for God, and I'm not comfortable around people that do. I can say that I received the forgiveness then. I don't know that He ever judged me. I don't know. But I know that I received the forgiveness in that moment. And it was the greatest event of my life so far. And I lay there in the presence of infinite love. I'm not aware of anything else that passed between. There was also behind me, I don't usually tell this, but there was behind me there was like a concrete partition. There was a vertical white wall with different shapes and colors of glass in it. And the light was coming through those and also over the top. And it felt so good it almost hurt. And I've come to believe that it was there because I could only stand so much love. As sick as I was, I could only stand so much. And it felt so good it almost hurt. And I can't explain that, but I do report it. And I lay there in that presence, and I couldn't tell you if it was 2 seconds or 4 hours. Because what we call time does not exist in that presence. I can't explain that either, but I can absolutely report it. And after that, I must have slept because the next morning I awakened. And I awakened wanting to be one of His guys. And that was my first cornerstone. And I thought I had surrendered. And the staff of the hospital saw improvement in me. I had a little bit of an attitude problem, it seems. And I'm sure none of you ever did. And about 2 weeks later, I was called into my counselor's office. And he was a member of Al-Anon, by the way. I salute you again. The man saved my life. And he was working on my aftercare plan, and I went in there with a great attitude to help him lay out this aftercare plan. Okay, if you're new and you didn't find that funny, please try to hear this next few pieces. This could save your life. So I came through the door and explained to him that I'm not taking Ann abuse, I'm not going to halfway house, and I'm not staying past 28 days. Just to lay out the parameters, help the man do his job. I was just being helpful. And he said, "You've left out something you aren't going to do." I said, "What?" He said, "You're not going to make it." Well, I took that rather personally. And I'm not a violent man by nature, but I make exceptions, and I made one for him. Fortunately enough, it was verbal. And I don't know about you, but I can't hear a spiritual message through a barrage of sewage. It's been necessary for me to clean up my language as part of my spiritual awakening. I can't say any of this thing in this microphone that I wouldn't want my mom to hear me say. I can't say anything in an AA meeting I wouldn't want my mom to hear me say. Truth is, I got no reason anywhere to say anything I wouldn't want her to hear me say. And that has really changed me. So I can't quote myself on what I actually said to this guy. I mean, I didn't even know his family. But I said, "Why'd you say that to me?" And he responded with a question that saved my life. He said, "If you already know how to run a program to keep yourself sober, how is it you happen to be a patient here?" And I responded by very cleverly saying, and nothing came out. And I'd never had that experience before. You could always answer, couldn't you? I had to make some of it up. But you can answer, right? You can answer. I can't answer this question. Never happened to me before. And that event took about as long to happen as it took me to tell it. I know I sat there a full hour. I heard none of the rest of what he said as my mind locked onto the unanswerable question. And I went from there. I know it was 11 o'clock appointment. I left there and went to lunch. And I went to group and the movie and phys ed. Wherever I was supposed to be during the day, my body was there. My mind is back in Jim's office trying to answer the unanswerable question. And I'm walking across the campus about 9 o'clock that night. And the event was like the answer was flying through the air and hit me in the chest. Because this part of me knew the answer before this part knew. And I can't explain that either, but I know it's true. And the answer was and is, I don't know how to run a program to keep myself sober. If I'm going to be one of the very few who make it, I'm going to have to do it all. This is not a cafeteria lunch for me where I can take what I want and leave the rest. I must win. Now I've got to win this time. I cannot afford the price of not winning this time. And I don't care what the price is, I will pay it. Here's my recovery, here's what hangs from it. My life, do you think a drunken pilot with a couple of thousand hours of flying time could have been killed? Not to mention visiting some other men's wives and driving drunk, those little things should be dead. Been to the insane asylum, been in the little rubber room in my underwear with no doorknob on my side. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands on that, but I don't stand alone on that little beauty in this room. I know that's for sure. My sanity, my life, my freedom. I should be in a military prison for the rest of my life. We already talked about that. Other things in my life that matter to me. My relationship with this fabulous woman that I'm married to. And our children and grandchildren. My job, my home, my vehicle, my peace of mind. There's nothing in my life that matters to me that isn't hanging from my sobriety. For if I lose it, all of the things in my life that I care about hit the floor and shatter. And I'm not here to sell that to you. I don't know that's your situation. It's mine tonight. That's why I'm here. I get a chance to participate in my recovery. I take it. And it was when I got that peace that I surrendered to what today I lovingly call Step 1, Section B. Aha! I thought the first step said we admit we're powerless over alcohol, therefore our lives have become unmanageable. On close examination, I've discovered the word therefore does not appear in Step 1. Looked up punctuation in the dictionary, found the hyphen or dash. Strangely enough, it is not shorthand for the word therefore. What it does is it connects two separate thoughts. The reason I was confused about that is June 27, 1984, the day of my most recent drink. The fact that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life was crashing down around my ears, those facts were related. On June the 13th, 2009, I am powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. I'm not playing with you. I've read this book actually several times. I can't find a place in the book that says, congratulations, having now achieved this lofty spiritual level, your life is now manageable. The tank's full, the keys are in it, load up, go get them. Somebody shout out the page number for me. I can't find it either. I do find in several places it promised me sanity. And part of my sanity is I don't want what I want anymore. I was getting what I wanted when I qualified to sit in closed meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous. There's doubt as to how much more I could survive of what I want. I want what God wants me to have. I don't know what it is. I know how to get it by doing what you've taught me. So I have fired me as general manager of my own life based on my performance. And one of the first things I did this morning when I woke up was I invited God in to run my life. Not give me some help, but take me. Whole different thing from give me a little help. Take me. And I asked him, help me send love to every seat in this room. And I did that. I believe in that. And so here I am in the treatment center and I get this idea. Okay, I'm not going to get to run it anymore. And that was when I surrendered to the second half of the first step. And I think my recovery really began on that day. And to sort of fast forward, I zipped through a 28-day treatment program in 6 weeks flat. And they can do the math now. And went back to Nashville, where the only person I knew in the city was in AA, was one of my customers, and I didn't want him to know. Right? For those who do not recognize that, that's newcomer thinking, terminal case. Gonna die from this pretty soon if I don't get some help with it. I set out to follow their aftercare plan. They said, stay away from your old playmates and playgrounds. And my favorite watering hole in Nashville is on 8th Avenue South. I had a 2-year chip in my pocket the next time my vehicle turned onto 8th Avenue South. I was not on the street for over 2 years. I'm not kidding. I would not go there. They told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to 87, and I've forgotten two of them. One night I was about to leave for the meeting, and my son fell and hurt himself rather badly, and we went to the emergency room instead of the meeting. Everybody here knows that was the right call, and I thought if you had missed, you just missed. I didn't know you could go to 2 meetings in a day, because I got a little case of newcomer thinking that is going to kill me soon. I got to be really careful now. I completed what some very well-meaning people have taken the steps off the wall and gotten an off-the-wall program and added a bunch of things to try to help people, and I think, quite frankly, they're killing us. I will admit that one of these psychobabble alleged four-step guides did get me through so I could do a fifth step. I'd like to share with you the number 2 best-kept secret in AA. The 4-step directions have been cleverly concealed in this book. I find the 4-step to be a series of lists, observations, and prayers. It's my experience that the writing portion of step 4 has very little effect. The observations, not what I notice while I'm writing, but what it tells me to observe, and the prayers are life-changing. I hope you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, get with somebody, just grinned and went like this and find out. It's an amazing process. Or do the book one sentence at a time and don't go to the next sentence until you finish that one. You'll find it. It's an amazing process, but anyway, I completed this psychobabble, multiple choice, fill in the blank. One of the questions, do you still hate your mother? I mean, come on. And called down to the treatment center to Bernie. Now, Bernie had not been my counselor, but when I had my big white light experience, I knew I was going to have to do a confession. And the reason I chose Bernie and I asked him and he agreed to it was I could look at him until he was stoned out of his mind. You know what it looks like. He's got this real relaxed face. He's got this dumb grin. When he moves, he kind of shuffles along. You know what it looks like when somebody's ripped? I'm taking my fifth step with this junkie. A month later, will he know what I said? He won't be sure if we did it. So I thought he was a good choice. I called. He said, sure. I drove about 3.5 hours. I took my fifth step with Bernie, which is where I began to get relief. And if you're new and the steps look to you like they're designed to punish you, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how they look to us, and we were wrong about that, and you are too. If I'd been doing the actual steps out of the actual big book with an actual sponsor, that'd be one who's actually done the steps, I'd have been getting relief before then, because that's what the steps do. They bring me relief. And just as an aside, Bernie was not actually stoned. Bernie was sober over 20 years. That was serenity. I didn't know what it looked like. I was... little case of newcomer thinking. And and at 6 months, I've done everything on the aftercare plan except get a sponsor. Now, if you're sober less than a year, don't try this fill in the blank. You may not get this. Everybody else, this is a two-word fill in the blank. I'm so insane, the only characteristic I'm looking for a sponsor I can relate to. Isn't that insane? Holy cow, what could be crazier than that? I can't figure out, you go to two meetings in a day, who can I relate to? Oh, I can relate to the squirrel on the next branch that didn't know his fuzzy tail from straight up, who I can relate to. Thank God I didn't find a sponsor I could relate to. We'd both be dead by now. God save me from a sponsor I can relate to. No, anything but that. What I needed was a sponsor I would obey. One of the other speakers said a sponsor that not that I can relate to, but that I want what he has. And this guy in my meeting, his lights were on. You know what I mean? I wanted to feel like this guy looked. And I said, would you sponsor me? And he said, well, we'll see. Here's your first assignment. Assignment? I thought a sponsor is like a new best friend who's going to introduce you around a little bit, show you the better meetings, maybe loan you some money, fix your wife. That's, you know, wrong about that. And anyway, it took me a week, and I just don't have time to tell you what it was. And I said, Jerry, I did the assignment. Sponsor me. He said, I'll sponsor you my way. What does that mean, Jerry? He said, you are too sick to stay sober on the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You will need the program also. And I did not know what he was talking about. And he said the number one best kept secret in Alcoholics Anonymous is the definition of the program. How do we keep it secret? Well, we read it in almost every meeting. It is in the most read, least listened to portion of our literature. On page 59, immediately before step one, where it says, here are the steps we took, which is suggested as a... no steps, no program. Jerry said the steps are not part of the program. The steps are the program. Just that simple. Everything else is great. The steps are the program. And I've been to too many funerals. A soapbox, and I don't apologize for it. We're committing murder with a phrase. Phrase is don't drink and go to meetings. You'll die from that. That'll kill you. Jerry said, if sitting around with a bunch of other alcoholics talking about our problems is going to get people sober, the guys under the Woodland Street Bridge in Nashville, Tennessee, would be sober right now. Because that's who they are, and that's what they're doing, and it doesn't work for them either. Here are the steps we took. And he scared me so bad I was honest with him. I don't spread the truth around too thick. And I said, Jerry, I don't want to do the 12 steps. And he said, that's okay. I said, good. He said, long as you do them. I said, I don't think we're communicating. Sure we are. You've been hearing the word willingness? Yes, I have. Well, here's the definition. Willingness is when you do what your sponsor says, whether you want to or not. Well, I don't like where this is going, so I hit him with my Sunday punch. I said, why do I have to do the 12 steps? Tell you a secret about why. When I ask you why, I am never looking for an answer. I'm looking for something I can argue with. And Jerry said, I do not answer why questions for the men that I sponsor. And the reason is, step one, section B says you're not in management. Why is a management question? Consequently, all of the questions begin with the word why have the same answer. And the answer is you don't need to know. I hated that when he said it. And today it's one of my cornerstones. I love it because I always thought it was not knowing that made me crazy. It was needing to know that was making me crazy. And when I laid down the need to know, I began to know and listen to an AA speaker named Jim Williams. Get one of his CDs. He tells that better than I do. But anyway, he says, I'm going to give you one why question a lifetime. Don't ever ask another one. And I haven't. I absolutely haven't. He says, I'm going to tell you why you have to do the 12 steps. He said, do you ever try to get sober on your own? I said, well, yes. He said, how many times? I said, well, I don't know. Well, how many times? I don't know. He said, give me a number. Ah, Jerry, I'm a puker. About 2,000. So you tried to get sober on your own 2,000 times, doing what you wanted to do and not doing what you didn't want to do. I said, yes. He said, that didn't work. So it must be, to get sober, you're going to have to do some things you'd rather not do and not do some things you kind of like to do. Man, I don't like this at all. And he said, the reason you have to do the steps is because alcohol is not your problem. What? Alcohol is not yet your answer. It makes you tall enough, smart enough, good looking enough. You can talk to the girls, expert on many subjects, fantastic dancer. This is for you, the lubricant of life. When we say to a guy like you, put down booze, we haven't said put your problem. We said put down the only answer you have ever known. This is the only thing that ever made your life work. Let's put that down. And the problem with it is that that leaves you without an answer. And you're the kind of a guy who needs an answer, or you would have never been an alcoholic. And you're going to have to lay down that answer. To successfully do that, you're going to have to pick up a new answer. And the new answer is going to have to be at least as good as the old one. And he was making sense, but I didn't like where it was going. And every time he took a breath, I said, why? Y'all talk about one day at a time right here, don't you? I saw that song. I said, one day at a time. I know what that means. Don't drink today. Have they told you new guys the second line of that? What they actually mean is one day at a time in a row. With like no breaks ever. They don't fool me with that. So if I'm going to stay sober one day at a time in a row, they got to get me something I could never get on my own. I used to quit forever all the time. And as you know, forever somewhere between 20 minutes and about 8 weeks. Forever, right? But, and feel better, work better, having a better time. But something was always coming where I was going to get thirsty again. I own my own business, close a big deal, make a lot of money, get thirsty, lose a big deal, lose a lot of money, get thirsty, get a new convertible, get thirsty, get a new girlfriend. I'm married, by the way. I'm not proud of that. It's just a story. Get a new girlfriend, get thirsty, get a new boat, or the big one. Ugh. Redskins play the Cowboys on Monday night, and I get thirsty. So if I'm going to do this one day at a time in a row, they got to give me this peace I can't find on my own. And I found it on page 60, first line, it says 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. It doesn't say a result. You'll hear it read that way. Not what it says. The is singular. It's my experience that spiritually awakened alcoholics do not drink beverage alcohol, and they don't ever get thirsty. It's been my experience with it. And anyway, what Jerry said is that because alcohol is not your problem, that's why you have to do the steps. He said, think of yourself as a garbage can. I said, okay, Jerry, I got that. What we're going to do with these steps is dump you out. We're going to stand the can back upright and fish through your life, and most of it's garbage, and we're going to throw it away. Portions are good. For example, do you love your children? I said, yeah, a lot. It's great. We'll keep that. When we get finished with these steps, you're going to be a big, empty, clean can with just a little good stuff in the bottom. Our program's kind of like going to the dentist. We've got to drill before we can fill. We've got to dig this poison out of your soul. The good news is, like the dentist, we got Novocaine. Here we call it sponsorship, fellowship, home group, love. It's not near as hard as the way you've been living. And the reason you have to do that, he said, is one of these days something very heavy is going to slam your heart. He said, your father's going to die. And on that day, if you don't have that big empty clean space, little good stuff in the bottom, if you don't have that big empty clean space to store that pain in, while we love you back to spiritual health, you will escape. And the only escapes you know are killing you and devastating everyone around you. And I ran out of why, and I allowed the man to coach me through the 12 steps. And I got that powerful promise on page 60, a spiritual awakening. I've been sober since late June of 84. I've been unthirsty continuously since sometime in December of 84. He had me somewhere in the step work the last time I had an urge. If you've been driving around town, new people, with a double white knuckle grip on the wheel to keep the car from whipping into the liquor store to get you a half pint, I know what that feels like. I haven't felt it in over 24 years. That's not the package. I don't like cooked turnips. I don't want to be in the house when they're cooking them. The smell makes me a little sick. I don't think I could swallow them. I'm having the same amount of trouble staying away from booze as I'm having staying away from cooked turnips. It just ain't something I do anymore because I have the new answer. I'm going to tell you a pretty rough story, okay? This is a hard one. It has a happy ending. In the wee hours of the 4th of July of 1993, my daughter fired a pistol into her mouth. And I found her a number of hours later. We don't know how many. We rushed to Vanderbilt Hospital. Within 20 or 30 minutes, there were 20 or 30 of you in the lobby. By dark, there were several hundred. And they told us for the first 4 days that she would not live. I didn't say may. They said, this suicide is successful. She's just not gone yet. She's conscious now. And I can sit at her bedside, and she can't talk. She's got tubes stuck in her, and she's a nightmare to look at. She can squeeze your hand once for yes and twice for no, and she doesn't want to die anymore. And 4 days is a long time. I believe if I had not allowed that man to coach me through those 12 steps and had that spiritual awakening as the result, that I would have committed first-degree murder sometime within that fairly short period of time. The man who came to you was capable of that. And I didn't have to do that. I moved into Vanderbilt Hospital, and some of you are new and don't know who you are yet, and I'd like to take the opportunity to tell you. I learned from the Al-Anons, trust the actions, not the words. I like to say you can pretend to care. You cannot pretend to show up. And you showed up. Sometime over the course of that first week, I went home for a very brief period of time. I was gone less than 2 hours and packed a bag and came back. And I stayed in Vanderbilt Hospital in her room for 60 days. So did you. There was not a time in the next 60 days there wasn't a member of my home group as close as I am to Steve right here. 24 hours a day for 60 days you were there. I know who you are. I saw what you did. And you were not there to keep me from drinking. It was so that one of my people could hold me if I needed to cry at 3 in the morning. A member of my home group had taught me to cry. I was sober a year, and I'm watching a very masculine guy cry in most meetings. And I asked him about the tears. And he said, someone says something beautiful and it touches my heart, and I weep, and it feels so good. And I said, I can't cry. He said, I'll teach you. And he did. And I cried a bunch coming in here tonight. I've been crying all day. This is a big deal for me. And there might be people now, that people here that disrespect me now because I'm a man that cries. I hope not. I hope you like me. But I'm okay if you don't. And for me, that's the big piece. Because if you didn't like the act, there was nothing because I thought I was trash. I don't think that anymore. Cherry Carpenter was one of the deans of Nashville AA when I got there. And he said, I'd rather be despised for who I actually am than loved for who I'm not. The book says the actors aren't going to get sober. I had to become real, and part of that for me was learning to cry. If you would like to learn to cry, if you'll see me after the meeting, I will teach you. And I'm not kidding. I really can. I've had the privilege of teaching several thousand of us to cry. I need to warn you guys, if you start crying at appropriate times and places, you will attract a lot of very healthy females. Do not call me and complain about this, because I told you right up front, okay? I told you that would happen. And if you're married, don't worry about it. Healthy females don't attack marriages. There's not a downside to it. I'm surprised at how many women can't cry. But I'm not kidding. Come see me about it. Anyway, my daughter lived, and she's doing fantastic. She and her husband presented us with a granddaughter 3 years ago. She sends you love, and she loves what y'all have done with me. She really does. And thank you so much. And I have permission to tell the stories that I tell, and I sponsor a guy whose son did not live. And emotionally, he was gone for a long time. It was the lead story on CNN for a week at a time, 4 or 5 times over several years. It was just one of those awful ones. And I didn't think we'd ever get to the end. He had that 1,000-yard stare. You could get up in his face and holler, and he couldn't hear you. He did not drink again. Don't hear that. He's carrying a 23-year chip. But emotionally, he was gone for a long time. He's back now. He's doing fantastic. And he said it better than I could. And this is what he said. One of these days you're going to have to go to the mountain all by yourself. If you have not done the work out of this book and don't know how to reach up and take the Master's hand, you probably aren't going to be able to go. They read the 9-step promises at the opening of a lot of meetings in Nashville, and I think we miss one of the most important promises. Here's one from page 14 and 15. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. We promise you trials and low spots. There you go. Get the work done. Have that empty can to store that pain in. Phenomenal experience. I started going to the old Woodbine Club. And Nashville is gone now, but what a play. It was held up by the nicotine on the walls. You know, if we'd watched them, that plane would have come down. And they had the slogans up there, one day at a time. Don't drink today, I know it means that, but that becomes not enough. And it's my experience that the first 10 steps are about cleaning up my past. I've done that. There's nothing gaining on me. I don't have to look over my shoulder at all. Excuse me. The last two steps, my analysis, are about embracing the truth that this loving, laughing God who wants the best for me holds my future. Clean past, loving God holds the future. Those two facts combine to free me to live one day at a time in this day. If I don't get both of those in place, I can't be here. That's part of why the steps are so important. They had a note on the wall that said, first things first. I understood that, but of course I'm a newcomer. I'm not doing it, but I did understand that one. One said, let go and let God. I wonder what that means. I was only doing one of the slogans. Come on, who knows? Think. Oh, my goodness. I don't find it in the literature. Take it upon myself. You're welcome to this if you can use it. What it says is think. What that means to me is three thinks is the limit. Whatever it is I think about once is good, twice is good, I can think about it the third time. When I have thought about the third time, I must lay it down. For if I were going to outthink it, I would have outthunk it in three thinks. If I go to the fourth think, I got a problem with step one, section B, I'm trying to manage it. The fact is, anything I'm upset about is a 1B problem. Anything from international politics to the way you drive your car, to the fact that this fabulous woman that I'm married to puts the toilet paper on the roll backwards. It should feed over the top, as I'm sure you well know. I fixed the ones in the men's room. They're right in the men's room now. Should feed over the top. She says she does it that way because we've got a cat, but I've been watching that cat for years. He doesn't use it. I tell you, she just loves it. Miss Linda, would you stand up? I want to introduce you to my lovely bride. Stand up, sweetheart. This is Miss Linda. She is a very active member of Alnite. Give one of her talks. I promise you, she'll give you things you'll take home and start using. She's phenomenal. And she chooses not to drink. I can't do that according to my text. I can't choose not to drink, but she can. And she chooses not to drink because she doesn't want me to come home from a hard day and have to kiss a martini or a glass of Chablis. Thank you for that. I'm on a constant search for people to disagree with me, not to argue. I don't want to argue with anybody. You may have a message for me. And I walked out of a meeting a number of years ago, and a guy whose sponsor I sponsor said, I disagree with what you said in the meeting. And what I had said was that my amends to my children would never be complete. And he said, that's not right. Did you go to your children and tell them what you had done wrong? Did you ask how you could repair the damage? Did they tell you? Did you do it? Did you ask for their forgiveness? Did you give it? And I said, yes to all of that. He said, you're trying to be the best father you can be today. It's not 9-step work, it's 12. It's the principles in all your affairs. And if you think it's 9-step work, you have not accepted their forgiveness or God's or your own, and you have work to do. And my text doesn't use the term living amends. I hear it a lot, but I don't see it. And if your sponsor's got you doing that, I endorse what your sponsor's doing, assuming your sponsor's done the 12 steps. If your sponsor hasn't done the 12 steps, I'm not sure what either one of you is doing. But if your sponsor is, your sponsor's final authority as far as I'm concerned. But I came down off the cross that day, I have watched teenage and older children manipulate us into some pretty ugly stuff under the banner of you were a lousy parent in the past. I'm trying to be the best dad I can be today. It ain't nine-step work, it's 12. And I got free then, and I share that for that reason, that maybe somebody here can get free. I share this next piece for the same reason. There's some political overtones to this one. I'm not singing them. I hope you don't hear them. This is simply a story of how I got free. As a young man, I paid for an abortion, and that festered my soul. And I used to drink away the what-ifs that come behind that. And I'm laying in that bunk in the treatment center when my soul screamed for forgiveness. It was for that. And I got forgiven. I got the forgiveness. I get to the eighth step, and I owe amends to an unborn child. And I don't think it can be done. Here's page 83. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. I was shown how to write that letter. And as I talked earlier, and that's an unborn child, a grandparent, anybody that's gone. Don't doubt the power here. In my experience, step four is not about writing. It's the observations and prayers. We talked about that. In my experience with this letter, it is not about writing. It is about tears. If you've got a letter to write, I'd like to talk to you. I've had the privilege of working with a number of people, and I got absolutely free. You notice nothing changes in my demeanor as I tell this story? New freedom. New happiness. It is new, and it's a phenomenal experience to have that freedom. I want to talk about another freedom. When I was sober 6 years, I moved out of the home my first wife and I were living in. I did a lot of things to hurt her. I'm not taking her inventory. I harmed her greatly. And I made her real sick, okay? But when I went through the steps, I got my innocence back. And she used to control me with my guilt. And I became uncontrollable when I get sober. And I was sober 6 years. And she's 5'5 and 105, and I'm 6 feet and 210. And she's tearing me up one more time, and I got this moment of clarity. I'm about to give her a straight right to the face. And when she goes down, I'm going with her. She is on the way to the hospital. I am on the way to the jail. It's a bad plan. Worked it out all by myself. And thank God there's nobody else there. And I turned around while she was still screaming and walked out the door and got in the car and drove away. And for those who weren't able to do that, I'm not judging you. This is just my story. And 48 hours later, I moved. I looked for apartments that day. I mean, I moved in 48 hours. I'm gone. I don't believe in divorce, and yet I know if I live with her, I'm going to hit her. It's coming. And I was given a gift, and because I asked God for help on this one, and I don't ask you to believe that this came from God. I want you to know that I believe it. But what I was given was the gift of three prayers. The first, and I prayed them each day. First prayer, God, if it's your will for us to be together, put us together. Second prayer, if it's your will for us to be apart, put us apart. Those are the easy ones. Here's the one that counts. God, if it's your will for me not to know today, leave me not knowing. That's the one. If it's your will for me not to know today, leave me not knowing. I believe in big deals. And when I'm in the middle of one, that's where I get the peace. Jerry said, my sponsor said that serenity is not freedom from the storm. Serenity is peace in the midst of the storm. And the only way I can have that is that I don't need to manage the storm. I have the privilege of sponsoring some guys, and I have some other guys that use me as a spiritual advisor. And frequently I hear myself saying, yeah, I think that's a problem. I want you to state the problem again. I want to hear the word today in the problem and let you and I begin to explore answers that contain the word today. Let's quit trying to fix it. I got a friend that says he spends too much time in his head trying to clear away the wreckage of his future. Let's quit trying to fix the rest of your life. We're no good at it. And I didn't know what to do. And it took about 3 years. And then I knew when my divorce was final, I asked Miss Linda out on a date and we courted. And it was a spectacular time in our lives. And we held hands for several months and didn't go past that. It was a fabulous thing. And wow, what a gift. Um, I give my last name in AA meetings in keeping with our tradition of anonymity. If that doesn't make any sense to you, I'd like to recommend the pamphlet Understanding Anonymity, the book Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, page 265. We're not a secret society. We're anonymous at the public level to protect us from ourselves. And so that newcomers won't be afraid that they'd have to go public if they came in. That's what that's all about. But we need to know how to find it. So a member of your home group goes into the hospital. You walk up to the reception desk. "Pardon me, ma'am. Can you tell me what room Janet from another planet is in?" "Is Chainsaw Mike still in 407? They don't have that. But the other piece of anonymity that I want to talk about is anonymous giving. And I had an experience years ago where I did something good for somebody else and didn't get caught. And I think that's really more what anonymity is about. And I got a gift, and it was like a piece of sunshine in my chest. And I could think about what I'd done any time it would glow. And so I never told a soul for about 6 months. And when I told it got out, and I'm going to tell you, I took a little boy fishing that wasn't going to get to go any other way. And there's a national scenic river an hour west of Nashville called the Buffalo River. And I hope there's a place in heaven almost as beautiful as the Buffalo River. And this 8-year-old boy and I put a canoe in that river and floated 5 miles in 10 hours, and we caught over 100 fish that day. Yeah, one of the magic days. Kid caught a 4-pound smallmouth bass. "He got my fish," is what happened. About a mile from the takeout, suddenly the sky's blacking, and I hear the thunder, and we're going to get it. And I slid up under some trees over in an eddy, and I'm about to give God a little piece of, "Did you happen to notice St. Scott down here took in this little guy, and he caught..." I'm about to do this prayer, you see. And this beautiful little guy looks over his shoulder at me and he said, "Is it okay to fish here?" It's one of the great lessons of my life. See, I prayed the third step prayer in a minute. And I think that makes the rest of my life none of my business. But I forget what I believe. And when the skies of my life blacken, and I hear the thunder and I know I'm about to get it, I think that's a prayer I'm supposed to take to my Father. "Is it okay to fish here?" Because you see, that's my mission. Understand that. It really is my mission. I'm going to take you flying again. My last flight in a high-performance plane, I leveled at 40,000 feet, 3.5 minutes after brake release. And they gave me a 30-mile circle around a point with an altitude block. If you're going to play at 700 miles an hour, they have to give some room. They used to tell us regularly not to go above 45,000 feet. They said there were two reasons. One is you would die. And the other is you would also owe them an airplane. And they were very finicky about their airplanes. But I was young and immortal, and that was back in the days before the radar gave them your altitude. They happened to take my word for it. And I'm sure they were making other mistakes at the time, too. Pulled the nose up, rolled in a little bit of bank, and I started an instrument climb. And I don't look outside. I'm flying at 9/10 of the speed of sound. I'm around 700 miles an hour. I'm wide open, everything short of afterburner. And I just wondered how high it would go. At 52,300, she was done. I think I hold the military power altitude record, the T-38, anyway. I rolled out on a northerly heading. I hadn't looked yet, but she won't climb anymore. And I rolled out, I looked up for the first time. It's 9:30 in the morning. The sun's coming up over my right shoulder. The sky, I'm looking through a bubble canopy. The sky above me is black. And I look out to the west and I saw the curvature of the earth. Really saw it. The conditions were perfect. There was a physical sensation when I saw that, like something warm had been poured over me and ran kind of slowly down. I'm sitting there looking at eternity. This thing we're riding is this magnificent blue ball just floating in space. And nothing holding it there but love. In the poem High Flight, the author says, "I reached out my hand and touched the face of God." Understand that. I did that day. Sat there about 2 minutes. Eased the throttles back very carefully. Brought it down, landed. I can't tell them I might be the town drunk. I ain't the village idiot. I don't tell them. This one will do it. And I didn't tell that the whole time I was in the service. And I, had the privilege of speaking at Burke Harlan's 12-year birthday, get one of Burke's talks, and told that story. And in the telling, I said, I don't know why I'm telling this. And you do, of course. It was my first spiritual experience. I just didn't see it until I told it at his birthday. For over 30 years, I've wanted it. In 1967, very few people had seen the curvature of the earth. I was one of them. And for over 30 years, I've wanted to see that again. And my little old business had a pretty fair year in 2004. And me and Miss Linda went out to the airfield in Nashville, and we chartered us a Learjet. They won't let me sit in the front row anymore. A Lear 31 will go to 51,000 feet. Would you like to know how I know that? Alcoholism took away all of my dreams. Alcoholics Anonymous gave them all back. Dream big, newcomers. We serve a big God. Dream big. Bigger than all that they did to me. Bigger than all I did to them. It's just okay. It's just amazing. I stand before you in stocking feet. We invited God here into this room, and I've tried to hold that in my heart. And my feet could be on holy ground, and I literally step out of my shoes when I speak. And I do that at every meeting in the silence, and I take my shoes off. And I try to conduct myself like I'm in the Master's presence. And I thank you for inviting your God. And if you're new, and if you borrowed my God and you got touched, borrow him again. Don Pritz was my great teacher. And he was the guy I used to take the questions that nobody could answer. And when you heard the answer, you know, it was principle-based. It would work every time. You know, what we do here is not about motive. It's about principle. Page 61, read that. Not check your motives, check your principles. I can't trust my motives. I can't trust them. And Cliff, my friend Cliff says that the 12 traditions are a set of principles designed to protect AA from my very best motives. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And anyway, Miss Linda and I had the privilege of spending Don's last Thanksgiving with him, and we all knew that's what it was. And I finally asked him a question that's been tearing me up for a very long time. And the question was, Don, what are guys like Scott going to do when guys like Don are all gone? And this humble giant cupped his hands and leaned forward to me. And he said, I have been bringing you hands full of water. Go to the river. And that was the answer. He said it wasn't him. He had gained access to a wisdom and a power far beyond his own that he believed was available to me, and I believe is available to everyone in this room. And I'd like to close my talk with what I believe are the directions for getting to that river, to that power. What I believe is the single most important thing that's ever been said in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I love you with all my heart. Thanks.